What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
What do you think's going to happen in this game, Sting?
That's great. I think it's going to be a really tight game.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back, Willard and Dibs. No Willard today. It's Dibs and Grandy with you on this Tuesday. And now we head out to the River Islands guest line because we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Stink, I imagine this is an easy week for the podcast. So many good football games to talk about. How you doing?
Yeah, it is. It is an easy week. I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Awesome. We're still basking in that epic Niner win over the Eagles in Philly. I mean, let's just start with this thing. How the hell have they pulled this off all season, and how did they pull that off on Sunday?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, you talk about just believing in what you have and who you are. From a play calling standpoint, to the players that you put in place, to the backups. I mean, you're on your sixth, seventh linebacker. You're picking up Eric Kendricks off the street, and he's making game changing plays. There's a bunch of dudes. Every time I look up, there's another dude making a tackle or making a play on the defensive side of the ball. And I got to look it up. Who is this guy? I've never heard of this guy. It's incredible. The coaching staff, what Kyle Shanahan has done on the offensive side of the ball, what Robert Saleh has done defensively, it's absolutely unbelievable to me what they've been able to accomplish. Good for them. I heard, you know, Christian McCaffrey's post-game press conference just about believing in each other and guys fighting for one another. And, you know, a guy like Trent Williams coming off the injury list to play. It's a special group. There's no question about it.
And you look at the two sides of the ball, and it's almost like picking between your favorite children, because the defense with the no-namers were – hanging tough, and then the offense with the jet sweep, reverse pass from Jennings to McCaffrey. That was a Shanahan special. How impressed were you by just that fourth quarter two-touchdown sequence?
Yeah, I thought it was amazing. Obviously, you know, just pulling out all the stops. And I think the other thing that's really cool, and I was talking about this with on my radio show today, just understanding what you want position by position. And the type of player you want, not only from a physical standpoint, you know, height, speed, weight, and all that, but just from a mentality standpoint, and then being on the same page, having kind of that blueprint, if you will, from a coaching staff that says, hey, man, these are the type of players we want. And it kills you that Kittle goes down. But the guys who come in, you know, have a similar body type. I always say it about the linebacking core. Everybody kind of, I know that none of them are Fred Warner, but they all kind of resemble Fred Warner, or they have in the way they've drafted guys, developed guys. Al Shire's a Pro Bowler for Houston now. We've got Dre Greenlaw here in Denver. You know, they profile a certain way, and to be able to you know, have that continuity and have that coaching philosophy and stay in tune to that so that your backup players understand exactly what, you know, what's required of them. I just thought it was an incredible series, an incredible fourth quarter, and an incredible game.
Stink, you were talking about like what McCaffrey said post-game, and just in general, the vibes and the belief that this team has held in themselves despite all of the issues they've ran into this year. Is that, you know, maybe the front office, and Shanahan, of course, is included in that. Is that finding the right kinds of guys? Or is that bringing guys in and teaching them, showing them the ways of Kyle Shanahan and this 49er franchise? Like, does that come from the head coach, or is that more a result of just who the guys are on the roster?
Yeah, I think it comes from the head coach. I think it comes from the philosophical approach of the organization. And I think the thing that you have to understand, you know, you juxtapose Philly versus San Francisco. And I think it's really interesting. I had this conversation with Sean Payton this summer. He said, you know, we had to make some tough decisions on some guys who are good football players but aren't the right guys. And the guys who aren't the right guys, you got to get them out of your locker room. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's the clubhouse lawyer guy. Sometimes it's the dude that's just a bad dude. Whatever the case may be, sometimes the guy that's just got an attitude that he mopes around, like that energy level, it just sucks it out of your teammates. One thing I'll tell you just about football in general, you know, there's 53 guys on your roster, right? And 50 of them can be great professionals. But you could have three guys who aren't, that are primary players on your roster, and their gravitational pull to suck people down with them is exponentially greater than the 50 professionals you have on your team. And you have to be aware of that, and you have to be willing to make tough decisions, and you have to be willing to get rid of good football players because they're not the right guys. And Philadelphia, they're not willing to do it. I think San Francisco has been willing to do it, and I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and perhaps the whole Ayuk saga has worked out in their favor because he's been a guy who actually hasn't been around. But I want to ask you about two guys who are around. One, Kyle Juszczyk, who kind of took that game over in the fourth, running people over. And, of course, Trent Williams fighting through injury and out there playing as well as ever.
Yeah, I mean, I just love the makeup. And when those guys, you know, when Trent Williams, who's, I think he's 72 years old. when Trent Williams is out there doing that, you know, you're like, man, I got to get in line. And that dude is still a beast. And I love, like, he's one of my favorite players to watch. I probably told you guys this when I first met him. I was doing a game of yours 2 years ago in Washington, and I saw him in the lobby. And I was talking to my, producer and my director, and in mid-sentence, I just dropped those two and ran across, scurried across the lobby to introduce myself to Trent Williams. I just totally fangirled over him because he is such a special player, and I'm such a fan of offensive linemen in general, but that dude is as good as there's ever played, and I respect the heck out of the way he plays, and obviously the guys on the team respect him as well, and yeah, it's probably one of my coolest moments, like one of my biggest fangirl moments in my entire life, and probably one of the most embarrassing moments as well, because the guys still, all my producers, and I'm with a different crew now, different director, different producer, but they still flip me crap about that all the time.
You stop short of an autograph and a selfie, I hope, right?
Yes, but I would have, if he was going, hey, you want to take a picture? I'd have gone, yes, I do. I guess it might. Yeah, it was amazing, but he's an incredible player, man. And I love watching the guy play. Juszczyk is great. Juszczyk is one of those guys that, you know, like when he went initially to the Ravens, like they didn't want to draft him, and a couple guys on the coaching staff, you know, convinced John Harbaugh to draft him. And he's just become one of the great players, one of the most versatile players in football. And love watching him play the game as well. Just those guys are, I just have nothing but the utmost respect for the way those guys play the game.
Mark Schlereth with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Insider calls brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Stink, we hear this a lot about Kyle Shanahan and the other like great coaches in the NFL. Like you hear maybe the phrase quarterback whisperer, or you hear, well, you get that guy in that system and that coach will get the most out of those players. What does, like, for us that are not in the know, what does that mean? What does Kyle Shanahan, what does Sean McVay, what do these guys do that others don't? Like, how does Kyle Shanahan consistently get more out of some of these players than when they play elsewhere?
Well, I think one thing that he really understands probably better than most, and his dad was like this as well, is not only the issues that you have, but everybody's issues on the team. And the issues that the defensive players have. So it's not just about reading the progression, you know, it's about reading the defense and knowing who's in conflict and what you're trying to do and have a great understanding of how it all works together. And I think the really, really, like the really great coaches have this unbelievable ability to not only diagnose things and you know, and do game plan things and to be able to say, hey man, we're going to get into this and they're going to give us this and this is where we're going to go with the football and all that kind of stuff, but really, really educate people educate their players on football totality. So it's not just about what we're trying to do, but what we're trying to take advantage of, why the defense does this. And so I think your knowledge just increases exponentially when you work with coaches like that, where you get to see the whole picture and it starts to slow the game down for you and you break the huddle. And instead of saying, hey, man, we're going to go after this, you start talking to yourself like, all right, where can I not get beat? Where's my help? What are they trying to do in this front? How does this front tie to the coverage that they always get? And your knowledge of the game just becomes so much deeper. And then you can take advantage of where your help is, where the body presence is, all the different things that you're trying to do as a football player. And I think that's one of the benefits to playing for me. It was for playing for Mike Shanahan and obviously for playing for guys like Kyle or Sean McVay.
Does the same thing this year carry over to Robert Saleh? Because I see a young defense that continues to get better and better. It's bend but don't break. I learned from you and Lo Neal and so many others about complementary football. How important has Saleh been to the way the Niners have played defensively, which is we don't rush you, we don't take it from you, but we just try to hang out there and keep you at bay?
Yeah, I think Saleh, one, the energy with which he coaches, and I think one of the things about him that I just think is phenomenal, man, his guys play exceptionally hard for him. They don't want to let him down. But I think that he takes very complex kind of concepts and boils them down and makes them very simple. And, you know, he's had a challenge this year because you can't, you know, cheat your drop spots and you've got to have great leverage and you haven't had necessarily athletes to get after people from, you know, a pass rushing standpoint with Bosa gone and some of the other players gone. So it has been, let's be on point. Let's make sure we simplify things as much as we can simplify them. And let's just go out there and play fast and let the rest take care of it. You know, I've had this conversation with Saul and with a lot of different people. Man, if all you do in the NFL is tackle well, that's all you do. All we're going to do is tackle well. It's going to be really hard for teams to put a lot of points on you. And if you're just solid and you don't give up, you know, you don't give up leaky yardage on tackles, man, you're going to be able to eventually, offenses just tend to shoot themselves in the foot, right? You get a procedure penalty, you get a formational penalty, you get a holding call, whatever, and you knock yourself out of field goal range or you end up having to settle for a field goal. Although in today's NFL, that doesn't seem to be anything anybody's interested in.
Yeah, we don't do field goals anymore.
I can't understand the aversion to 3 points. It blows me away, but that's the world we live in right now.
I think, obviously, we've been talking a lot about Kyle Shanahan today, and one thing that I've been arguing for is I think Kyle Shanahan, not just one of, if not the most valuable coach in the NFL, but just any NFL person, that's player, coach, general manager, Kyle Shanahan is one of the most valuable across the board. Obviously, this is a quarterback-driven league, and the best quarterbacks will always be the most valuable person on an NFL team. But when it comes to Kyle Shanahan and the other best coaches in the NFL, where do they come in on that list of most valuable people? Where do they get, you know, interspersed into the player rankings? Are they more valuable than the best running backs, the best wide receivers, the best edge rushers, some of the quarterbacks? Where is the best coach, the most valuable coach, fit into the most valuable player ranking?
Yeah. The value of the coach is, it can't be... I don't know how you measure it. Obviously, you look at players, and players are the ones that have to go out and execute and put it all together. But the coach putting you in a position of leverage, the coach putting you in a position to win football games, the coach putting you in a position to accentuate, you know, your skill set and mitigate the weaknesses of your skill set, those guys are so valuable. And Kyle's, you know, obviously one of the best to do it, and he's exceptional at it. And, you know, if you're talking coach of the year, I mean, he's got to be, you know, it's got to be a very short list with him and Vrabel. And, you know, I think obviously what they did in Jacksonville was huge as well. But, yeah, he's just had a phenomenal impact on the game. And you look at, you know, you just look at the way the league is structured right now and how many football teams run a derivative of what Mike Shanahan kind of introduced in Denver in 1995 and ran that system for so long. And obviously there are tangential branches off of that system, but the root of that system is what we were doing here in the 90s. And it's incredible. It's incredible to see, you know, the LaFleurs and the McVays and the Shanahans and all the guys coming off that tree having that kind of success.
So I was thinking, if I had to put you on the spot and said, all right, like you can, you're drafting all of the individuals in the NFL. You taking Josh Allen. Like I said, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow. And then I feel comfortable taking Kyle Shanahan. Is that crazy? Would you take Myles Garrett, some of the best defenders, before you would take who you think is the best head coach, or am I somewhere near the right mark?
Yeah. Well, no, I think you're close. I mean, I think that, you know, it's hard to differentiate because, you know, I've played for two of the best that's ever done it. You know, I've played for Joe Gibbs and I played for Mike Shanahan, the two of the head coaches that I played for, and the value of those guys are absolutely incredible. I just remember sitting, you know, getting ready for Super Bowl 32 and Mike putting on, hey man, we're going to get into, you know, strong right formation, strong right slot. And anytime you get in this slot formation, the weak side linebacker kicks out, you know, to kind of get two by two outside to take away the slants. And Leroy Butler comes screaming down there and he makes every tackle in the backfield when we're running 18 handoff strong. And so we're just going to exchange that responsibility. And it happens every time. And he showed us film of them doing this and them getting Leroy Butler getting tackle after tackle after tackle after tackle in the backfield. And it was probably the third or fourth play of the game, maybe third play, whatever it was, second play. We ran 18 handoff strong out of a strong right formation, strong right slot formation. And I'm in the stance next to Zimmerman and I go, here it comes. And we scoop the backside of that formation, the backside three technique. And here comes Leroy Butler thinking he's just going to have a freelance, you know, into our backfield, make a tackle. And I hit him in the jaw and rattled his cage. And TD cut back up inside for about 15 yards. And I'll never forget, it happened exactly the way that Mike Shanahan said it would happen. I mean, like I was watching a movie and I was walking back to the huddle with Zim. I go, oh, we're going to gut these sons of guns. Like, we're going to gut them. And sure enough, you know, TD gets the MVP and he missed a quarter and still had the MVP with 158 yards rushing and three touchdowns. So it's stuff like that. The value of something like that is incredible. Speaking of value, man, I also played for Joe Bugle, legendary offensive line coach, Jim Hanifin, legendary offensive line coach, and the godfather of the zone running scheme, Alex Gibbs, legendary offensive line coach. So, you know, I know how fortunate I was to have those coaches in my life and the value they gave to me.
Great story. And Leroy Butler, I'm sure, was stunned that you were in a spot where no one ever had been prior to that. And you had me thinking about this game coming up on Saturday where Mike McDonald has had Kyle Shanahan's number, just held him to 3 points a couple of weeks ago. What does Kyle Shanahan have to do to try to get this offense moving a little bit in a hostile environment?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. And I think one of the things about Seattle and their defense in general is I kind of look at them and, you know, just going back to my playing days, man, if you have one guy that's a really good defensive lineman, kind of a war daddy, we can take him out of the game plan and all that kind of stuff. When you've got four guys that can flat get after it, right, when you've got a rotation on defense, you can keep them fresh. That's a really tough thing. You get Trent Williams back in this game. You didn't have him in the last game. That'll make a huge difference on the edge because the edge is what killed you guys last time around. And then, You know, I think one of the things that I kept looking at back to that game, as I remember and recall, is how much, you know, how much upfield pressure you're getting off the edge. And can you have a counter in the run game to attack that, you know, where we let guys get up the field, whether that's some type of wham blocking, whether that's some type of counter blocking, you know, where we let.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Those guys get up the field on us and we trap them and create a space out there. So it'll be really interesting. I know Kyle will have a great plan and he'll have players back that he didn't in that week 18 matchup. But they got to keep, you know, they got to keep pretty clean, no question about it. And they got to run the ball better than they ran the ball in that week 18 matchup.
Stink, one more from me. The Seahawks will now play the Niners in consecutive games. Of course, they had the bye. It happened 10 days ago. Is there any edge, maybe it's psychological, is there any edge to having just played this matchup and being the losing team? Is it easier to adjust, to know what you need to do differently as opposed to if you're Seattle, it just went so well for you? Is there any edge to being the team that just lost the recent matchup in a rematch?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, that game was for the NFC West crown, right? That was for the number one seed. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like you were holding anything back. And, you know, the edge is you're going to have a couple of, you know, you lose Kittle. Did Kittle play in that week 18 game? I don't remember him playing. I remember Tonja's making a lot of catches, but yeah, I know Williams didn't play. I know Trent didn't play. It'll just be interesting. I think part of it's the challenge, man. You put that film on. Here's the one psychological advantage. Like every guy in a locker room is kind of a type A competitor, right? And you put that film on and you don't have to say anything. You got your ass kicked. I mean, that was a physical drubbing. And and that 13-3 score was nearly as close as that score would indicate. Man, that was an ass whipping. And so Listen, man, I've been on the receiving end of a few of those, right? It reminds me back in 1998, we had lost a game to the Giants after going 13-3 with the Broncos. And then we went into Miami and got whipped by Miami. And it was painful. Like it was a whipping. And I remember them showing up here on playoff Sunday in the divisional round, I think it was. And, they had beaten us in Miami and we opened a can on them to the tune of 38-3. And it was one of those things where you just have to take that whipping. You have to watch that film and be disgusted with yourself and the way you guys played. And I think the one thing is, you know, oftentimes the other team that puts the physical whip on and gets a little confidence in that they can do it again. And that always doesn't play well or doesn't bode well for that team. So, getting whipped sometimes is one of the best things that can happen to you because, as I always say, I've never learned anything about myself in the good times because I was too busy patting myself on the back. It's during the bad times when I learned that, you know, what I was made of, so to speak. So that could be an advantage for San Francisco.
Interesting.
Great stories Stink, today.
We appreciate it. Oh, we might have just lost Stink anyway, but that's all right. We were about to wrap up with Stink anyway. Oh, got you back, Stink. Yeah. We appreciate
Thanks,
your time,
Mark.
Stink. Thank you so much.
Great
you
stuff.
You guys got to take care.
All right, there goes Mark Schlereth. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark is the host of the Odyssey original, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Great conversation, Dib. That's just a football encyclopedia right there, the stories that he was telling about
great
his playing
stories
days.
And that's a good example of you get whipped, and the Niners did get whipped.
Yep.
Put the score aside and they did come back and open up a can on Dan Marino 38-3. That was in Denver though. This is on the road, a little bit tougher,
little bit different, there's no doubt about that. We're sponsored by Surfside. The Golden State Warriors are back. Cheer on your Warriors with an ice cold Surfside. Only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles, so it's easy to sip and enjoy. It's not a seltzer, it's Surfside. Proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly. We'll react to stink. I mean, I think he gave me a lot of ammo there, Dibs. I mean, there's so many ways a head coach has impact on a team. He said I wasn't that far off, saying Shanahan, the fourth but most important individual.
You weren't that far off, but you were far off.
No.
No. Not Schlereth.
He wouldn't give me a number, but...
We could have name dropped and we would have gotten up to about 12 or 13.
Okay.
And plus, he, I mean,
you
he
tell me it would have taken too long.
He played for Mike Shanahan. Of course, he's going to lean Shanahan. You know, but you're not totally wrong.
He's biased, is what you're saying?
He also said that players make plays. Coaches coach to put players in position to make plays.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. We'll talk about it when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.
Getting whipped sometimes is one of the best things that can happen to you because, as I always say, I've never learned anything about myself in the good times because I was too busy patting myself on the back. It's during the bad times when I learned that, you know, what I was made of, so to speak. So that can be an advantage for San Francisco.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
It's a fantastic question. It really is. First time I've been asked it this way.
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a good question.
Well, that's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, welcome back. It's Willard and Dibs. No Willard. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. Unfortunately, we didn't get any great questions from Mark Schlereth today. I thought we asked some good questions, though.
We did, and he told a couple of great stories.
Great
if you
stories.
Didn't catch it, it may appear... on the best of, because we'll have best of
we
tonight.
We will have best of tonight.
With the 7 o'clock Warriors Live. So
yeah.
That thing might appear, although the station does so much great stuff every day. It's hard for you, I'm sure, to pick and choose.
Baldy today.
Yeah.
That'll probably be featured, would be my guess, although I don't know. I'm not running it today. I don't have the inside info. It's the guy behind the glass today, Lucas.
So all right.
We'll see what he chooses.
Knowing Lucas, it won't be anything from us because he holds a grudge against you and me. So
yeah,
there's
both
that.
Of us.
I think so.
He likes Willard. He doesn't like us.
Right. Team yeah. Willard, no doubt.
By the way, Willard at jury duty, which is why he's not here today. He'll be back tomorrow, so I'm filling in. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. I'm glad the guys played, though, that cut from Mark Schlereth, because it's the last thing we asked him, if there's any advantage to playing the team that you're playing again so recently in the past and you coming out on the losing side of it. Obviously, you want to win and you wanted to be the one seed. That's not what the point of the question was. The point was, do you have any kind of advantage going into a recent rematch, given that you got absolutely run off your own home field in the first matchup, the second matchup of the season, but the first one in recent memory? And he said, well, maybe there's a little bit of extra motivation. Maybe you're able to learn a little bit more about yourself and what you did wrong, what you need to do going forward. Because when you get whipped, that's where your mind goes. When you're winning, you're patting yourself on the back and you're not even thinking about what you can do better. And I know it was only a 10-point game, Dibs, 13-3 in Week 18. That qualifies, though, as a whooping. It was not close.
First downs, 23 for Seattle, 9 for the Niners.
Oh,
you had 9 first downs. You were 2 of 9 on third down. They outgained you by almost 200 total yards.
Oh, man.
Time of possession, 38 minutes to 22. So you didn't have the ball, and when you did, it was a lot of three and outs. When they had the ball, they ran it, and I'm looking at my game notes here, and it was a whole lot of running, a lot of Charbonnet and Walker and Charbonnet. And, you know, the defense was bend but don't break. Seattle missed 2 field goals and went for it on a fourth down, and I'm with Mark when it comes to field goals. When did we stop enjoying 3 points? And the opening drive, 4th and 4 at the 4, and Darnold goes to Cooper Kupp, and Upton Stout was there for a pass breakup, turnover on downs. Niners, of course, went 3 and out with a punt.
It didn't matter.
And Wallow actually appearing with a face mask on that special teams play.
Oh.
Before we actually
we didn't
fell
know who
in love
you
with
were.
Wallow, right? We hated him then. We love him now. But that was the game where Niners go 3 and out, 3 and out. And then you went for it on 4th yourself. You didn't get it. You finally got a field goal at the end of the half. You never led. You never got into much of an offensive rhythm. And, yeah, you kind of got whipped. Seattle did everything they wanted on the ground.
Yeah, you gave up that Charbonnet big touchdown run in the first quarter, and then it was field goals the rest of the way. But that first touchdown was enough because you only scored 3 points. Of course, you had the interception on the doorstep of the goal line where the ball got tipped at the line towards McCaffrey. He bobbles it and kind of shovels it to his defender who picked it off, and that was kind of the end of it for the Niners. It's hard because on one hand you say, well, you got thoroughly outplayed and so thoroughly outplayed that you felt like you should have lost by 20 or more. But on the flip side, Dibs, you say, well, we got so thoroughly outplayed it would be hard for us to play worse, and yet we still only lost by 10 points. If we just play better, this is a game that we can absolutely win. I would imagine that's what the Niners are thinking, that they're going to have to come and play a whole lot better to hold up their end of the bargain. But it's not as if Seattle played a perfect football game either. They did a lot of things well, but in those big moments, still did, specifically offensively, they didn't play good either in those big moments.
They didn't, and even when they got the ball back for their second possession of the second half, third quarter, Darnold with a fumble, that ball is just bouncing around there on old Levi's grass, and your Yetur Matos has a chance at it, doesn't get it, Seattle keeps it, and ultimately they'd cash it in with a 31-yard field goal after Walker runs for 19, JSN gets 19, Charbonnet gets a dozen. So there were too many plays where they were able to run it and get between 7 and 12, and then Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is going to be a problem on Saturday because you don't rush the passer, and he's a tough cover. He's a great route runner. So you're going to have to find a way to get them into third and uncomfortable, and it's going to be as much of a Robert Saleh game as it is a Shanahan game as far as timing up your blitzes and mixing up the coverages, so maybe Sam Darnold does see ghosts a little bit.
Let me ask you this. I know this game was recent. It was just, what, like 10 days ago? It hasn't been long at all. It was week 18. You're now in the second week of the postseason.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It'll be exactly 2 weeks from the day because this game in Week 18 was a Saturday game, and the Niners are playing in Seattle on Saturday for the divisional round. So it will be exactly 2 weeks between games. Do you think the Niners' defense, we probably feel more confident in them now than we did going into that game? Because you remember where you were going into that first, or not the first, the second Seattle game, the Week 18 game. The Niners had just given up 38 points to Chicago. Old man Phillip Rivers scored 27 on them, and then they hold Seattle to 13 and kind of a fake 13. They certainly deserve to score a whole lot more than that. But then you only give up 19 points to Philadelphia, despite being down everybody on your defense. And as Mark Schlereth told us, like your sixth and seventh linebackers are the guys that were playing in that game. Do you feel like, though, what we've seen from the defense the last couple of games makes you feel better about the defensive personnel and the defensive ability to maybe limit the Seahawks a little bit as opposed to what you felt going into that Week 18 game?
Yeah, you feel better because you came out and you played much better against Philly, and I think the number was 18 missed tackles against Seattle.
Wow.
And Mark Schlereth Stink just said that, like, if you could teach your defense to do one thing, it would be tackling, because even if you're not schematically in the perfect spot or if you're not able to really be a shutdown D by personnel, if you can just tackle, and if you think about the Seattle game, Seattle, I don't think they missed more than one or two tackles. So
probably not.
Even when you got plays, and I'm looking at the Kittle screen where he lost 6 yards, they just rolled up and got him on the ground right away, and McCaffrey couldn't get rolling. So they tackled, you didn't. But against Philadelphia, the Niners were mostly really good on the run defense and tackling. So I feel better about that part of it. The one thing that has me a little bit concerned is, for one, the rest advantage that they have, and the other one, the crowd, obviously, and whether or not the Niners can just establish something, because Seattle's defense is really good at all three levels. They get after you. They don't have to blitz you. They don't blitz very often. So it's going to be tough for this offense to really get a lot going.
I was thinking about the Seattle defense when watching the Texans last night. Texans and Steelers, it was a defensive affair until the very end of the game when the Texans started pouring points on, although some of those was because of their defense. They are like the two best defenses in the NFL. I think most people would say that. Most people would probably say the Texans number one and then the Seahawks number two. That's not the point. The point is, I feel like they get there in different ways. Like Seattle, of course, they have so much talent, and they got dudes at all three levels, and they're really difficult to plan for, and they can at times just physically dominate you. But it feels like the Seahawks, Dibs, are a defense that relies more on just like the prowess of their play caller, Mike McDonald, who is kind of like the opposite of Shanahan. Shanahan's the offensive genius, and Mike McDonald might be the defensive genius, the preeminent defensive genius. in the NFL, and he just puts them in great spots. He plans very well. He develops game plans very well. While the Texans, no knock on D'Amico because he's a defensive guy as well, but the Texans just, they just line it up and they say, all right, our 11 will dominate your 11 every single time we play. We're just going, Daniil Hunter will beat all of your offensive linemen. Yep. And Will Anderson will beat all of your offensive linemen. And we've got all these great DBs with Petrie and Lassiter and all these other dudes. We're just going to dominate you on all three phases. I don't know which defense I'd rather play. The one that's just so physically dominating, they don't need to rely on elite scheme, or the team that has a lot of really good talent and also has an elite scheme, because that's what the Seahawks have. It might honestly be more difficult because you have a game planner in Mike McDonald who can tailor what their defense needs to do to any individual offense that they're going against.
Right, and this offense in particular, because you know when he was with Baltimore on that famous Christmas night game, He basically took Brock Purdy and he put him on the bench.
He ended his MVP campaign.
And he ended his night. As you remember, he got pulled from that game after his fourth interception.
So did Darnold play in that game? Did he come in?
I thought it was a year before Darnold. It was, it was Darnold.
Yeah, 2 years ago, right?
He must have thrown the fifth pick because I believe they threw five interceptions in that game. And then McDonald this year has been really dominant scheme-wise against this Niner offense. So it's not so much that he knows Kyle's secrets, but when you play a team this often and you see the trends of an offense, you feel like you have somewhat of an advantage. And defensively, they are the number five ranked red zone defense as well. Mm. The Niners have been great in the red zone. This is a good red zone defense.
Absolutely. And by the way, it was Sam Darnold who came in and threw the fifth Niner interception. Brock was 18 for 32, 255, no touchdowns, four interceptions. Woo. And then Sam Darnold, 8 for 14, 81 yards, a touchdown, but an interception as well for Sam Darnold in that 33-19 Ravens win.
And that's
on Christmas.
That's rough, and I would imagine that this game Saturday will likely mirror the first two, which was 17-13 and then 14-3, low scoring affairs. Yeah. And honestly, the one thing you feel pretty good about going into it is Seattle as a red zone offense, they're ranked number 22, and I think part of that is Sam Darnold. And so if you can be that bend but don't break, if you can force field goals and not touchdowns, stay in this ball game, give Brock and company a chance in the fourth quarter, which coming off of what he just did, two touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
And he's really good in the postseason in the fourth quarter from behind for whatever reason. Because it's not the case in the regular season, believe it or not. But in the postseason, he's amazing at it.
Yeah, not so much. And they haven't trailed to where you can come back a lot this year. Yeah. Like they were getting motorboated against Houston and they were pretty far behind against the Rams the second time. So this though, set up in Philly where opening play of the fourth, trick play touchdown, you trailed again, march them down, touchdown, you win.
Great game. Great game and great fourth quarter performance. 888-957-9570. We're reminiscing on that blowout loss. Final score, not a blowout, 13-3, but it felt like a blowout in favor of the Seahawks. Week 18, they claimed the one seed. They claimed the NFC West. Now the Niners, they get their rematch. Let's go out to Dave in the city who wants to talk about the conversation as well. Dave, what's up? You're on Willard and Dibs. It's Dibs and Grandy with you. What do you got?
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, fellas. I just want to bring in the fact that I feel a lot more comfortable headed into this matchup because of the guys that weren't on this roster 2 weeks ago, which is going to be Kendricks and Wallow. These are veteran guys, and I just take a look at the last game. They were able to, get some three and outs, and we just didn't have that with Seattle. I felt like they drained so much clock because they were able to sustain a lot of stuff, or a lot of drives, I should say. But I just feel like Kendricks, and if somehow Warner plays, I feel like we're going to be keeping a lot of plays in front of us, and we won't look as lost. Because Bethune and Winters, they fly around, but the nuances, I feel like those younger guys don't see the field as well as the veterans and just making those simple plays. What do you guys think?
Appreciate the call, Dave. 888-957-9570. I think there's something to that.
In a very small sample size.
Very small sample. Kendricks, he's a veteran. I think he's, 11 years in the league? Like, he's been around for a while. And there's no denying that at his best, he was a really good linebacker in the NFL. He's not that guy anymore because your lifespan is not very long in the NFL. So that's the case there. this Garrett Wallow guy that we don't really know that much about, we're learning more every single day, has kind of taken us all by surprise and was pretty good, I felt, against Philadelphia. I do think maybe there's a little bit, Dibs, of D. Winters was a starter all season, and he was expected to be the number two alongside Fred Warner and All-Pro, and that's a so much of an easier job to do than be maybe the leader of a unit. And I know he never wore the green dot, and the green dot is the guy that's in charge of, you know, giving the play call out to the rest of the defense. Is what Fred does. It's what Tatum Bethune did when he was playing and when he was healthy. But when D. Winters kind of has to be the number one guy in that unit, frankly, Dibs, he's really struggled. He has not been that good, in my opinion. And maybe there is a world, Dibs, where D. Winters not playing and turning to Eric Kendricks at least makes that unit feel a little bit better or more reliable. You're going to get lost less often when it's Kendricks versus D. Winters, or maybe even Wallow versus D. Winters. There might be a little bit there, Dibs, where that loss might not actually turn out to be a loss for the defense in terms of your productivity.
As far as consistent play, maybe, but I think that D. Winters has an ability to make the big play. And,
true.
You know, like the caller was saying, to be able to fly around and make a big play, but that might get you out of your gap assignment, and that may give way to a big play. And we saw that against Philadelphia this last weekend, where D'Amino Lenore bust inside and he gave up containment, and Barkley was able to scoot around the outside for 20-plus on the ground early in the game. So much of the Robert Saleh scheme without Bosa and Warner is bend but don't break, do your job, make them earn it. And that's where, even in the last matchup with Seattle, they had to earn it. And, you know, they only were able to march it down there and score a couple of times because you held them out and you made them go 9 and 10 plays at a time in order to score.
Yeah, like that's, I forget who was it that told you guys, maybe it was last week, and Schlereth didn't really say this exactly, although I think it's what he was getting at. And if you missed our conversation with Stink, you can find it wherever you get your podcast, including on the free Odyssey app. Just search Willard and Dibs and it'll be there. But what Schlereth was saying, which is what you brought up earlier, Dibs, is if you just are a good tackling team, if you are just not missing tackles, you're going to be like an above average defense. Like, because you just don't get beat on individual tackles. You first guy that hits a guy is going to bring him down. You're going to be pretty darn good. And what the Niners do oftentimes, Dibs, is they're maybe content giving up the underneath stuff, and they'll give up 4 yards here, they'll give up 5 yards there, but they're going to try their best to not get beat deep and not get let anyone get behind their defense. And what they're going to force the offense to do, the opposing offense to do, is execute over the course of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 plays. And if you execute, all right, congrats, you're probably going to score because they're content giving up some of the smaller stuff. And if you have an elite defense, you can obviously take away some of that stuff as well. But given what their personnel is, they've decided our best strategy is, all right, if you want these 4 yards, take it. But if you're going to get greedy and you're going to try to force something over the top, we're not going to let that happen. And as a result, you're just kind of praying that the offense will make a mistake here or there, maybe get into a 3rd and 7, and you'll get a stop on that 3rd and 7, and that's the end of the drive. If you're going to score on them, Dibs, it's going to take a consistently well-executed attack by an offense, and there are, of course, offenses that can do that. But as we saw when Seattle came to town just a couple of weeks ago, if you have a mistake on any of those drives, you kind of put yourself behind the chains, and your gigantic advantage in terms of yards gained only turns into a 10-point advantage on the scoreboard.
And the more you can keep Sam Darnold out there, especially in throwing situations, the greater chance you have that he's going to give you one. And Darnold is a guy who will turn it over. He had the fumble that you couldn't quite get to in the last matchup. And, you know, he's going to make at least a throw or two that are gettable. The up for grabs, and if you can get that takeaway, which you haven't done very well this year as a defense, I'm looking at their turnover percentage defensively, and the 49ers are kind of in the middle toward the bottom in, you know, percentage of drives that end with you turning the other team over.
Yeah.
The Jets, by the way, 1.6%, but not only last,
zero interceptions,
1.6% of drives they got a takeaway.
What's second to last?
5.3.
Oh my God.
And the Niners are at 8.4, which puts them in, you know, 10th from the bottom. And the scary one is Seattle is, they're like number five in turnover percentage, and they're number two in percentage of drives that they allow a score. So they turn you over, and they don't allow you to score. They're second only to Houston in that category
defenses,
of,
yep.
you know, percentages of, but the Niners are 13th. So they don't give up a ton of scores on drives, bend but don't break. Maybe you force the team to go for a fourth down and they don't get it, or yeah. maybe they miss a field goal. Feels like they've had a lot of missed field goals against them.
They have. That has also flipped from last year. Not only has their special teams been better at executing with their kicking units and all that, but they've also, the luck factor has flipped, because last year no one missed field goals against them. This year a lot of teams are missing field goals against them.
I just found the number. Field goal percentage against.
That's a great stat.
They're tied for first.
With who?
Houston.
Wow.
66.7%. Kickers went 22 for 33 against the Niners.
Then there's obviously some, like, you get a block here, like good play here yep. and there, but in general, that's just a luck number.
Yeah, I think so. It's luck mixed with some conditions, mixed with, like you're saying, special teams.
And forcing field goals, obviously, like the more field goals you force, well, that's a percentage in terms of
right.
field goals missed.
And they forced a medium amount. I mean, 33 is kind of right in the middle. And yeah, the 66.7 percentage is crazy. Wow.
But like all those little things, you feel like, I kind of felt this way about Philly, but they proved me wrong, because I thought you turned the ball over twice. Right, you have a bad special teams day, all things considered, not a terrible day, but not a good day, you're probably going to lose that game. So I was just going to say the same thing here, like those small things kind of have to go your way. They prove me wrong in Philly, but Seattle's better than Philly. It's probably the case this week, Dibs, is if you turn the ball over like that, if you miss a field goal, if you miss an extra point, like there's probably little way that you can win that football game if you do those sorts of things.
It's tough against Seattle, where great defense, they turn you over, and they don't really let you score. So when you get a scoring opportunity, you've got to cash it in. You can't afford to like leave three out there. And so you know, you're looking at, I think, a 24-point total. It should be enough to get it done. One interesting note about the field goals against, Willard and I had a bet with Steiny and Guru that the Chiefs would not make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
The Chiefs, their opponents missed one field goal all year.
Wow.
31 for 32, 97%.
That's
so,
mostly luck. Again,
especially in Kansas City, where the field is not exactly conducive to a lot of kicking.
True. And they deserved it after last year. I don't know if you have last year's numbers, if you could find them. I would imagine opponents missed a lot of kicks against them last year, and they probably made all of theirs, just about.
Yeah, it's funny, because those are the little things. Like turnovers, it's such a variant, right, from year to year. And, I mean, kicking might be the same, just quick glance at last year, and they were 77% against.
Yeah.
Bottom five.
Big difference.
Yeah,
big
difference. That's a lot of three-pointers that didn't go your way this year.
Interesting. That is an interesting number. That's basically luck, and the Niners, they've been luckier this year, there's no doubt, but they've also taken advantage of that luck. Okay, we got to take a quick break. Chris and Tony, we will get to you when we come back. If you hang out, we will get to you right when we return. Breaking down this Niner and Seahawks battle. They just played about 10 days ago. It was a dominant win for the Seahawks, although not on the scoreboard. But might you feel a little bit better about the Niners' defensive personnel going into this game? Baldy was asked that on the morning roast. We'll let you hear what he had to say as well. Plus, the Warriors host the Blazers at 8 tonight, which means Warriors Live with me begins at 7, presented by Xfinity. Watch your favorite home court advantage, brought to you by Xfinity. Watch all your favorite teams all in one place. Xfinity, imagine that. We're also brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.